What is up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is February 13th, 2019, and shit, I think it's been like 10 days since I've done a podcast. Please, let's never be this far away again, guys. Please, not the day before Valentine's Day. Please. Anyways, real quick before we get started today, and today is what it's all about, folks. What we're going to get into today gets to the core of what just really ticks me off, and honestly, what inspired me to start doing a podcast to begin with. We're going to get to it all today, but first, I want to do a slight bit of housekeeping. The most important thing is let's talk about the capitalistic engine behind this podcast. Those are my patrons, people that sign up on Patreon, make a small monthly recurring donation. I want to shout those people out first and foremost immediately because they are the people that keep me going. First and foremost, the fine feathered folks over at Quantamize.com, Quantamize. Quantamize is an awesome piece of software that enables you to have AI-powered quantitative research, same quality that hedge funds get, except boiled down and put on a nice simple interface for people like you and me and the rest of us degenerates here listening to the podcast. So if you check out Quantamize.com, there's a free trial link in the podcast description. You get access to over 10,000 stocks, options, and cryptos, whatever floats your boat, folks, whatever you got to do to get your rocks off. I support it, okay? I don't care if you're trading soybean futures in New Guinea. Doesn't really matter to me, folks. Whatever you're into, I support it, and so do the folks over at Quantamize. All right, I also want to shout out my friends over at Corvus Gold for coming through with a big patron. My buddy Scott Corsi, the author of Debt Slave Economics, is still in the house. My homies Chris Bede, Ken R., Chris Boas, Russ Valenti, and my new fine-feathered friend, Mr. Behind the Bid. What's going on? BehindTheBid.com if you want to check them out. Just linked up today, and I appreciate the shit out of him. I've also got a couple of other new patrons I want to shout out before we get started. Patrick Flynn just came through today. What's up, brother? I see you. William McBrien, what's going on? Devin Pearson, don't know whether you're a guy or a woman. Doesn't matter, folks, by the way. It's 2019. There are no genders anymore. I'm just going to give you one big universal hello and thank you. No matter what gender, race, color, creed, sexual orientation, or planet of origin you are from, I support you and thank you for being a patron. My friend we'll just try that one next time because it's just too late in the day to try and pronounce that. Jonas Giese is in the house. My man Harrison just checked in a couple of days ago. Ned DeLorme, Stephen G, Volteface Investments is still in the house. Forrest Scarange is a new patron that I appreciate. Gene W. Cruz, David McConnell, Kinman Tam, my girl Devin Christine. What's up? I see you on Twitter, Devin. David J. McDonald is in the house. Leonid Mironov still in the house. Chris Irons Jr. still in the house. Taylor Duran still in the house. Matt Crum, what's up? Jim Tilton, my brother. Grant Garden, Dave, Vinny Scarsella. All right, we'll get on with it. Two other things I want to note real quick before we get started. The first is, turn this podcast off now, okay? You know why, folks? Because I am not an investment advisor. I am not any type of professional. This is certainly advice you should not be taking. Literally, I was serving beer for a living like 10 years ago, okay? So that's not really that. I think it may have actually been sooner than 10 years. I think it was, serving beer for a living like 8 years ago, okay? So I know, here I am now. We're talking a little bit about finance. We're talking a little bit about business, okay? But just under 10 years ago, folks, I was stationed behind the bar of an Irish pub in Philadelphia, just pouring beer for a living. And to be honest with you, I kind of miss it a little bit. There's days where I'm just like, yeah, you know, I really liked serving people their beer. But anyways, the moral of the story is, don't take any of this advice. And very simply, just do your research elsewhere. Now, speaking of booze, which plays an integral role in the rainbow of ideology that surrounds the QTR podcast, I do recommend a 2-drink minimum for this podcast. If the state of the financial markets continue in the direction that they're moving, I might have to bump it to a 3-drink minimum. And then if things keep going the way that they're going, eventually I'm going to skip the drink minimum and just add crack into the equation. I'm going to be like, just don't even listen to this unless you're smoking crack, because that's how bad things have gotten. But we're not there yet, all right? So just have a couple of sips, sit back, relax, listen to the smooth sounds of this 36-year-old that drives a Honda that is badly in need of a back bumper, and let him tell you about why everybody else in the world is wrong except for him. Here we go. This is the QTR Podcast. What are we talking about today? Today we are talking about, really, my motivation to make this podcast. And in case you haven't read my manifesto, which is on my website, which judging by the amount of traffic my website is getting, nobody is reading it. So I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you have not. But in case you have, sorry for repeating myself. The point of what I'm doing here, right? Who am I? What am I doing here? Like Admiral James Stockdale said in that vice presidential debate, the one where he didn't have his fucking hearing aid turned on, right? What am I doing here? Who am I? People didn't know if he was serious and he was actually confused on stage or if he was just making a joke. It was a very tragic situation. The guy was actually a war hero. But regardless, it was very funny. It was funny at the time. What am I doing here, right? I'm here because why? I want to pull the curtain back for the average retail investor, the normal schlub, the regular degenerate, somebody like myself, all right? Somebody that I can align myself with, somebody that drinks 16-ounce beers instead of 12-ounce beers, somebody that drinks E&J brandy instead of Courvoisier, all right? Somebody that is more likely to be found passed out behind a dumpster somewhere at 5 o'clock in the afternoon than leaving an actual normal job with a suit and a tie on, all right? Those are my people, folks. And on this podcast, we call them degenerates, all right? It's a loving term, but it also happens to be the truth, all right? So I don't know who we're trying to kid here. Cognitive dissonance is not going to help anybody here, folks, okay? So here's the point. Today we're going to be talking about some comments made by one Mr. James Cramer, also colloquially known as Jim to his friends and his audience. This isn't the first podcast where we've talked about Mr. Cramer, but since he has been such an egregious and repeat offender of just generally pissing me off, we're going to go back and we're going to address some comments that he made on his show, Mad Money with Jim Cramer. And if you haven't seen that show, I encourage you to tune in, but only after you've smoked a nice big fat joint, because otherwise the show is of zero value at all. My point is, personally, I don't feel that the financial content on the show is worth anything. That's just my opinion, and we'll talk about it in a second. But my second point is, even if you're not into finance, you know, the guy is basically running around wearing funny hats and funny clothes, and he's hitting buzzers that make different noise, farting sounds, guys that yell buy and sell. Now, I don't care what you're into. If you're high, that's funny, okay? It doesn't matter if you're a marine biologist or you're working at McDonald's and you don't even know what the stock market is. You smoke half a joint and you turn on your television and you watch Jim Cramer parading around the TV wearing some type of sombrero, talking about, you know, Chipotle, and then smashing buttons that make sound effects, 9 times out of 10, you're going to find that funny, folks. Okay? I'm just here to level with you. So maybe you tune in for that value. But certainly I'm not rebalancing my personal portfolio based on Mr. Cramer's recommendations. And we'll talk about some things that he said today. And then I will leave you to go on your way and make your own decisions as you want. Again, do your research elsewhere. All right, folks? Find somebody with a bow tie. Find a financial advisor with a membership to a squash club. You know, those are the types of people you want to look for. I don't know if I said this. Maybe I said it on an early podcast, but one of my friends from college went into finance and was in the area at one point. I think he was in Philly. And I was like, shit, dude, you want to get together? Like, play basketball, play tennis, whatever? He's like, I don't want to play tennis because it could mess up my squash game. I was like, great, how about we don't hang out at all? All right, that's usually your first clue. Maybe I'd let him manage my money, but not quite the person I want to go out to Oktoberfest with, if you know what I'm saying, folks.
Excuse me, is this a low-carbohydrate German Oktoberfest here style? What is this, is this a Hofbräu? Is this a lower... I wouldn't want anything with extra carbohydrates to interfere with my squash game.
Go order a martini somewhere, all right? Leave the drinking of 32-ounce mugs of beer to me and my podcast listeners. We'll handle it, all right? It's that simple. Anyways, Cramer says yesterday, this is the headline that somebody sends me on email yesterday, And rightly so, they attached to the email, "This could be good podcast material." And I opened it and I thought to myself, this could be good podcast material. This guy understands me. And forgive me because I forget who sent it to me, but I appreciate you sending it to me. And it is good podcast material, and we're going to talk about why. And then some other shit happened today, too, that I want to talk about. Let's just start with what the Hives would call the main offender, all right? This article is entitled Cramer Remix. Don't let Wall Street convince you there's a Fed-induced bubble, all right? Now, we're just going to start here at the top. And just purely on an aesthetic standpoint, let's just talk about something I'm annoyed with before we get to the financial part of this. This article called Cramer Remix is one of a series of articles that are constantly posted on CNBC after Cramer's show. So he'll do his show at 6 o'clock or whatever, and then they wrap up his recommendations and his advice. They package it together in a little article that they dump onto CNBC.com, and it always leads with the title Cramer Remix, all right? So what they're doing is they're giving you basically a wrap-up of his show for the day. I don't like the term Cramer Remix. To me, comes off like they're saying, if you're not square enough to tune into the actual financial news program, we understand some people may be a little too hip, okay? Some people may be a little too hip for CNBC. You can always tune into the remix. Like they're going to fucking put a spin on it. Like they're going to play his track from the show and fucking Grandmaster Flash is going to come out with two turntables and start scratching Cramer's recommendations. There's no remix. You should just call it Brain Farts by Jim Cramer. That would be a better title. You know, there's no remix. They're not changing anything he says. They're not dropping it to a fucking trap beat. There's no guest appearance by T.I., all right? So let's just drop the term remix, the Cramer remix every day. There's no remix. That's the first thing I'm taking exception with. So let the record reflect as such. Now, let's talk about the comments that Mr. Cramer made, all right? Now, this is the same guy who pounded the table and cried like a baby during the financial crisis because he wanted the Federal Reserve to act. He wanted the Fed to help prop up the markets and help ensure confidence in the markets by, I don't know what he wanted at the time. I don't know if he wanted more. If he wanted more certainty from them, if he wanted bailouts, if he wanted them to print more money, if he wanted them to cut rates at the time. But this is the same guy that over the last couple of months has constantly said over and over and over that the Fed needs to cut rates. He's basically adopted the Trump narrative that higher rates are bad at all costs. When, in fact, anybody with half a brain and a Fisher-Priced My First Fucking Economy set understands that interest rates are a price themselves that should be set by the market, by the amount of cash that's available to lend and the demand that wants to borrow that cash, right? So the idea that further fixing interest rates lower is somehow altruistic and is a good idea and is doing us, you know, good in the long term is a farce. And as Peter Schiff would say, it creates a moral hazard. That's what he says all the time. A moral hazard. It creates a moral hazard. I listen to a lot of Peter Schiff. He loves the term moral hazard. He also happens to be correct. Okay? There is a cost for lowering interest rates. So when you fix the price of anything, whether it's interest rates or the price of fucking soybeans, there's always going to be consequences. The market will adjust around it. So if you're not allowing the market to set the price of interest rates, right, which is usually you would kind of back your way into interest rate prices by the amount of supply and demand and allow the market to create it. So when you fix it, just like when you fix wages or when you fix any price, if I go out and fix the price of, you know, lean hogs to a, you know, certain number over the course of the next 3, 4, 5 years, there's going to be aftershocks of that throughout all types of businesses in the economy. You know, McDonald's will have to adjust, Wendy's will have to adjust, farmers will have to make changes, logistics and supply chains of providing lean hogs will have to change. So it's the same deal when interest rates are fixed, right? When interest rates are fixed by the Fed, the market and everything around those interest rates bears the brunt of the aftershocks of that price fixing. And you don't need a PhD to understand that. So the fact that Jim Cramer has a degree from Harvard and has come out here and told his listeners and has told his viewers that Wall Street is not in a Fed-induced bubble is fucking comical. It is insane. All just my opinion, folks. I'm not the objective truth, so I advise you to keep an open mind and do your research elsewhere. Certainly reach out to Mr. Cramer for comment if you would like. But one of two things is happening here. Either Cramer has been so indoctrinated in Keynesian theory and, you know, this perpetual need to suck on the teat of the Federal Reserve to keep the quote-unquote economy, which is actually defined as the stock market, looking good. Either he's so indoctrinated into that line of thinking that he is now, as Bill Fleckenstein would say, buying his own bullshit, or what I actually think the likely scenario is, and this is just based on what I have heard Mr. Cramer say publicly and what's available on YouTube, namely one video that I always recommend entitled Cramer Manipulation, in which you hear him talk on the street TV about how he basically used to manipulate the markets when he was short positions, and he called longs morons. That is a quote, moron longs. He's going after all the moron longs, all right? Folks, those moron longs are now his viewers. So here's what I think theory number two might be. Theory number two might be that Cramer very fucking well knows that we're in a Fed-induced bubble. But that would tear a hole in the fabric of the universe of all of his listeners and all of his supporters and all of his action alerts plus, you know, portfolio members, whatever, you know. You want to see when he buys Johnson & Johnson? If you find that exciting, you sign up for that. I don't know. But all these people that follow him and this whole, you know, wake, his whole wake of revenue that he generates off of his name and off of his personality, that's not what they want to hear. They don't want to hear that we're in a bubble. Why? Well, I'll give you a couple reasons why. One is they're also kind of part and parcel to this system that has an inherent long bias, number one. The only thing they know and the only thing they've been taught are the quote-unquote lessons that have come down from the quote-unquote legends of, you know, the last 100 years, your Buffetts, your Siegels, anybody that says buy and hold, basically, that has a great track record of being a long investor. Those are the legends that people really model themselves after. So maybe Cramer knows that these people don't really have another perspective on the markets, and certainly these people that are buying and selling stocks on the advice of Mad Money or that are seeking the counsel of Jim Cramer for their trades likely don't know how to profit from a market that moves lower. And this is one of the big beefs that I have, right? If the average everyday retail investor understood something like short selling, right, which scares the fuck out of people when they hear it. People automatically think, you know, it's illegal and it's terrible and it's bad for the markets and it's bad for America and it's impossible to do and you need to have a, you know, $250,000 in a margin account to do it. And none of those things are true, all right? All short selling is a permitted and legal way to bet against a company that may be overvalued for a number of reasons. And you can also bet against commodities and you can bet against the stock market as a whole. You can bet against anything. Like Frank says on It's Always Sunny, I don't know, bet on anything. So short selling isn't this inherently icky and nasty and evil, you know, kind of esoteric way of investing that everybody makes it out to be. But the problem is, Cramer's listeners, they don't understand that. I would guess most of them don't. Maybe some of them are sophisticated and I'll eat my words, that's fine. Wouldn't be the first time I've eaten my words today. Forget about in years past. But my guess is more this. My guess is that he wants to play to the ethos of the people that keep the ratings coming in for his show. And this is all just speculation, and it's all just my opinion. We're still allowed to have an opinion in this country, right, by the way, before all of my social media accounts get shut down. My guess is this is nothing more than pandering to an audience that has been indoctrinated into a system that, for one reason or another, whether they don't have the capability or they just have never learned how things work, people are unable to kind of step outside of. And the role that I want to play here on the podcast is to kind of just, I don't want to tell people what to do, but I want to let people know that there is a broader picture worth looking at, okay? There is a broader picture than Jim Cramer, right? There is a broader picture than CNBC. There is a broader picture than long-only investing. And these are things that Cramer will not talk about on his show. So that is what makes me believe that these comments that I'm going to read to you here are a result of him pandering to his audience. Because he doesn't want to lose listeners. And if he comes out and says we're in a bubble, what are his investors supposed to do? Well, they'll sell stocks, but they may not know how to get short or how to short them. And then what? Then they don't have a reason to tune in anymore. If they sold and they're sitting in cash waiting for the market to crash, why are you going to tune into Mad Money for the next stock pick recommendation? You're not. But if you keep the narrative alive, like fucking CNBC did today, when they led, okay, halftime report led with saying, is your biggest risk not being in the market? Do you have any idea how asinine of a statement that is? Halftime report led with the statement, quote, is your biggest risk not being in the market? Do you understand, folks, that risk comes from being in the market? You're taking far more risk by being in the market than you are being out of it. Even though there's risk to holding cash, there's risk to holding commodities, there's risk to holding gold. Really, by putting your money in equities, you're bearing risk. So the way that this is positioned, this statement, is your risk not being in the market. I mean, there's professional money managers, I'm sure, that read that and said, well, that's a fucking stupid thing to say. Why would you say that? Why would you position it like that? But again, this goes back to, what does the retail trader think? How does somebody who doesn't understand the full picture and the full dynamic of what's going on, how does the regular Joe trading on his Robinhood account at home with a couple thousand dollars read a statement like that when a financial program on a quote-unquote reputable network opens with the line and saying, are you at risk by not being in stocks? It's almost just like leading with, you have to go out and buy stocks, except the way that it's positioned actually might scare investors a little bit more into buying. That I find to be disingenuous. And that goes hand in hand, in my opinion, with what Mr. Cramer said here. I'm going to read this article to you now that we're 22 minutes into the podcast and I've already worked up a sweat like I've been playing full court fucking basketball for the last 4 hours. Here's what the article says. The idea that the Federal Reserve has created a bubble in stock prices by pausing its initially hawkish rate hike agenda sounds like nonsense to CNBC's Jim Cramer. All right, so let's just start with that first paragraph. We're just going to start right there with the lead, okay? The lead is the idea that the Fed has created a bubble in stock prices by pausing its initially hawkish rate hike agenda sounds like nonsense to CNBC's Jim Cramer. Well, let's just take a look at what happened over the last week, okay? We have stocks that are arguably already at bubble prices, right? We have a Shiller PE that's over 30, that's near historical highs. Every valuation metric that you can find that isn't some Frank Luntz pulled bullshit nonsense that you know, some strategist pulls out of his ass is telling you that at the very least, stocks are fairly valued. We baked in the benefit of deregulation. We baked in the benefit of tax cuts. We've baked in the benefit of the infrastructure plan. We've baked in the benefit of manufacturing coming back to the United States. We've baked in the benefit of the China trade deal being done, even though it's not done, right? We've baked in all those things. And the market got near all-time highs, 25,000 on the Dow, over 25,000 on the Dow, until the Fed came out and said, hey, we're just going to continue to raise rates as we said we've been doing. Rates are already minuscule, very, very low, and we're just going to inch our way forward to the neutral rate. And all of a sudden, what happened? Stocks had a little bit of pause. They pulled back 15%. They pulled back maybe 17%. I can't remember what it was, heading into Christmas of last year. And that was it. That was all the Fed and the Treasury Secretary and the President and the news networks needed to vie and ride for stopping the rate hikes, cutting the rate hikes, and potentially putting whatever, 0% interest rates back on the table and quantitative easing back on the table. That's it, folks. equity markets triple. We go 10 years of low interest rates. Stock market, again, is up multiples of what it was coming out of the last housing crisis, coming out of the recession, the Great Recession, whatever the fuck it's called. And now we have this little tiny pullback of 15% and people flip out. So then what happens is the Fed capitulates, Jerome Powell capitulates, can't take the heat one reason or another, comes out and says, well, you know, maybe we are getting close to the neutral rate, maybe we will hike rates less than we thought this year, but we're definitely going to put them on a hold for now. As a result of that, what happens? The market takes off again, right? So coming out of Christmas and heading into a point where we had a little bit of a pullback in stock prices. By the way, if you invested coming into 2008, 2009, 2010, you're still up multiples of what you invested. Generally, as long as you threw a dart and hit a company. After that pullback and after Steve Mnuchin shits himself and feels like he's got to make calls to the big banks and then issue a press release on Christmas Eve or whatever. You can go back and listen to my podcast then if you'd like more information on that clown show. But after that happens, the market comes back up, okay? 22,000 on the Dow, 22.5 I think on the Dow, 23,000 on the Dow. And then the Fed comes out and says that they're going to stop. We're going to hold off for now on rate hikes. And what happens? Boom, the Dow goes right back up. 25,000, 24,000. It rallies again. So let's just think about this from a factual standpoint, okay? The idea that the Fed is causing the stock market to go up by saying that it's pausing its rate hikes is true. And we know it's true because when they came out and they said they were going to pause rate hikes, the stock market went up. And you could take it right down to the day, the second, the minute that those FOMC minutes were released. As soon as it happened, the stock market went up and it tore ass. The Dow, I think, was up 1,500 points since then or 2,000 points since then or whatever. You could do that math and those little nuanced things on your own. Get a chart, get a graph paper, lay it all out. Send me your work in from home. I'll display it on my refrigerator, okay? So his initial statement, which kind of implies that the Fed isn't helping prop up stocks, is bullshit. Total bullshit. We could argue about what a bubble is and what a bubble isn't, but we're in a bubble. It's very clear. You don't have 10 years of 0% interest rates, 1% interest rates without creating bubbles. And if you need proof of that, just go back. You don't even have to fucking rent a history book. The books haven't even been printed. The fucking ink is still fresh on them. Just go back 20 years, 25 years. So here's what Cramer says. Quote, I can't stress this point enough. When people talk about a Fed-induced bubble, they mean that the Fed should be out there tightening aggressively and laying waste to the economy. The Mad Money host said Tuesday after an intraday rally. Listen, Jim, we're out there advocating for quantitative tightening because quantitative easing isn't a success unless you can unwind it. Okay? Anybody can go out and ease, but the whole point of QE was supposed to be that you could stimulate the markets, and then when things get better, you can rope them back in again by raising rates and by tightening the balance sheet. Now, we've heard all this rhetoric over the last couple of years about how the Fed isn't going to, you know, we're not going to wander around like some bloated, drunken giant with $4 trillion worth of bags of horse shit on our balance sheet, but that's exactly what's happening, all right? And we've had a very truncated amount of time here where the Fed has tried to tighten and has tried to get some of that manure off of its balance sheet, and the markets have flipped to shit over it. So what you're doing, Cramer, is you're putting the short-term interest and what? Maybe the interest of your viewers? I don't know. Ahead of what is ultimately going to be a long-term problem. And the nice thing about this long-term problem is that there's a simple reasoning behind it, which is you can only inflate bubbles for so much longer. You can only print money for so long until either you have a debt crisis or the currency loses its value. And that's just as sure as the day is long. under the realm of the operating parameters with which we run the country and we run the economy and we run economic policy. It's a certainty. The only question is when. What Cramer is doing is telling you, ignore that line of logic now, because it's in our benefit now to make sure that stocks always go up so that we can, you know, whatever, compound our SPY dividends or whatever gives him a hard on. Worry about that now, but don't worry about what the coming consequences could be. And I think that that is a morally bankrupt, logical fallacy that is not good enough for a junior year high school fucking game theory class, let alone what you are disseminating to hundreds of thousands of viewers. Again, all just my opinion, right? So the Fed has been saying for years, we're going to be able to tighten with no problem. We're going to be able to get this shit off our balance sheet, when everybody knows, and everybody's been saying the whole time, they're never going to stop and they're never going to be able to tighten. Because the fucking monetary policy experiment, the Keynesian experiment, the MMT experiment, the quantitative easing experiment has a big fucking flaw in it. And everybody's been saying that. Well, the people I hang out with have. Joe Kernan's not saying it. Steve Leisman's not saying it. But I'm saying it. So now when the time comes to put your money where your mouth is, because the markets are up and the economy is booming and jobs are at record lows and interest rates are at this paltry, piss poor 2% or 3%. And you get a little volatility in the stock market, you say, fuck it, we gotta stop it. We gotta stop rate hikes, we gotta stop tightening immediately. That is the most cowardly thing that we could possibly do. We are acting like cowards. We're putting our day-to-day, short-term comfort ahead of logical thinking and ahead of policy thinking that, you know, will be extrapolated over decades. So the article goes on to say, why would people want the Fed to resume its aggressive rate hike agenda, a move that would almost definitely lead to lower stock prices? Cramer thinks it has something to do with hedge fund managers, who make up a large portion of this growing chorus and tend to make money short-selling stocks or profiting on a bet they'll trade lower. Okay? Cramer, you're the hedge fund manager that was short-selling stocks. Okay? So don't fucking place the blame on hedge fund managers because they want the economy to be run with some semblance of objectivity and some semblance of clear-minded clinical thinking, all right? And you turn around and you use hedge fund managers as the scapegoat so that the retail investor equates them to being bad. Well, they want higher rates. The hedge fund managers, they know how to short. It's this esoteric thing. Nobody knows how to do it, except for the dark men in the back rooms, in the back alleys. All it is, folks, a hedge fund, it's just a bunch of computers in a room, trading the same fucking interactive brokers platform you're probably trading, shorting stocks relatively close to the same way that you're doing it. There's no difference. So for this guy who is on camera and on tape and on YouTube admitting that he fed basically false information and rumors to journalists when he was short positions in stocks and he would take put positions in stocks to give the market the impression that something was wrong. Or he would go in and he would fuck with the futures market when it was illiquid to give people the impression that he wanted to move the market one way or the other. The same guy, the same hedge fund manager that did all that shit is coming out now and blaming hedge fund managers that are short sellers for the Fed's failed policy not working. Do you have any fucking clue how insane that is? Do you have any clue how morally bankrupt of a line of logic that is for this particular person to put forth? Go to YouTube, watch the video called Cramer Manipulation. Watch him talk about the quote-unquote moron longs. Watch him talk about how he fed journalists rumors because he wanted to get a stock price down. This guy knows how the fucking game is played, okay? He knows how it's played. And you know what? I know how it's played too, buddy. All right? And to come out and take this stance against what is really economic common sense and classical economic common sense, which says that after this egregious amount of quantitative easing that is now 15,000 standard fucking deviations, 5,000 sigmas off the standard deviation, whatever the fucking stat term is, way off the rails, folks, is the point I'm trying to make. The last 20 years of rigging the markets to have a stock market that has tripled since the last recession and employment numbers at zero are not good enough for this guy, that he needs to turn around and blame the problem on hedge fund managers after he himself was the fucking problem at his hedge fund, according to him, according to his words. Because he was a short seller. He was a short seller that ran a hedge fund. Okay? So who's the problem? Either you believe what he's saying is what he actually believes, and the Jim Cramer of old was actually a big part of the problem and a big part of the system and shouldn't be listened to and shouldn't be trusted today, or this guy is just full of shit and fucking making stuff up for retail investors that don't understand how the capital markets work, and they're looking for a scapegoat, and they're looking for somebody to blame. And this is a morally bankrupt, okay? We paying attention? This is a morally bankrupt and an awful way to make your point. I think we should question the sanity of anyone who desperately wants the Fed to tighten, he said. They're either crazy or they genuinely want stocks to go lower because they have way too many short positions on and they're lagging the S&P 500. You asshole! Where is the possibility that they just want monetary policy to be somewhat normal? What about the people like myself? I don't have a shitload of short positions on. Yes, I'm long some gold miners, but I have a huge long book too. I'm long equities. And yes, I'm short some equities and I own some puts. But what I want more than anything is I want some common sense. Okay, folks? Just use the old fucking grapefruit on top of the neck. I want some common sense to hit the market. I want people to understand that it can't always go up. The market is rigged. Low interest rates rig the market. They force the market upward, and there is a price that we have to pay, all right? And that's the point that I'm trying to make. I'm not a big Mr. Short seller. I don't even think I'm net short right now. Maybe if you count my long gold holdings as a short, maybe I would be, but I don't even think I'm net short right now. All I want is common sense. And you know what? There's a lot of fucking people out there that think exactly the same way that I do. And I know because I get their emails and I get their Twitter messages and I get their podcast fucking comments, okay? We're not all hedge fund managers, the big bad hedge fund managers that have too many short positions on. I think we should question the sanity of anyone who desperately wants the Fed to tighten. I think we should question your fucking sanity. What's going through your head when you say something like that? You know how it works, Jim. You know how the system works. Trust me. Are you going to be able to answer for these comments when the US dollar turns into monopoly money? Because let's just assume Cramer, he doesn't know any better, even though I think he does. But let's just assume he doesn't know any better. And he's saying, well, while rates down, stocks up. Rates up, stocks down. Why do rates up when rates can go down and stocks can go up? Duh. Let's just say that's his line of thinking. You have to know that it's not a game that can be played ad infinitum before something has to give. Even if the entire global economy subscribes to this policy, even if the central banks worldwide adopt this notion of QE and this insane central bank-led mess that we're in, even if everybody buys in, you can't sustain it for good. Because it's just a confidence game at the end of the day. So Kramer says, take this idea of a Fed-induced bubble off the table. We have an economic expansion that's been fueled in part by lower taxes, and that's a good thing. Take this idea of a Fed-induced bubble off the table. You know what? I'm putting it on the table, all right? Lest we forget, folks, let's take interest rates off the table. Let's say we don't even hike or we don't even cut. Let's say rates stay where they are. We're going to have a good old-fashioned traditional economic recession this year, next year. We're tapped out, folks. Okay? The credit card is tapped out. Corporate balance sheets are tapped out. The consumer is tapped out. The student loan market is tapped out. The subprime auto market is tapped out. The consumer credit market is tapped out. Pension funds are tapped out. Municipalities and states are tapped out. There's nothing left. There's no juice to squeeze from this lemon. So even if you buy Kramer's idea, okay, that fucking rates should stay low, because why move them higher? Because that'll make stocks go down, and stocks going down is bad. That's not the economy. The stock market is not the economy. So we need to think about the actual economy. With unemployment at an all-time low, and the market about to enter into an earnings recession, that's a recipe for disaster. What happens in an earnings recession? Companies don't grow earnings the way that they've been able to. What happens then? Well, then the stock prices start to come down a little bit. Well, what happens when stock prices come down? Then the average mom and pop sells some of their stock holdings, right? Institutions start to sell their stock holdings. The market starts to pull back a little bit. It's a recession. It's a traditional recession. People have to deleverage. And what happens? Everybody's wallet starts to tighten up a little bit. Discretionary spending slows down a little bit. People have trouble meeting their debt obligations. So people tighten up the wallet a little bit more. And the less that people spend, the more that these corporations are impacted by a continuing recession. And it feeds off of itself. And it feeds off of itself until, in a vacuum, it hits some type of bottom. And things pick up again. So, assuming the Fed does nothing, we're going to have an earnings recession. So you might as well just take the medicine, okay? You might as well just understand that the Fed has created a bubble, and the Fed can burst that bubble. And if they don't burst the bubble, all we're doing is accelerating quicker into a future where the currency collapses or we have a debt crisis that we cannot handle. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If you think that it can't happen to the United States, that we have some type of fucking magical powers, I think you're wrong. Just my opinion. Yeah, but the US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. Great. What's the dollar backed by? Nothing. It's backed by nothing. It's backed by the confidence of the US government. Or somebody would say, you know, the revenue stream of U.S. taxpayers, the guarantee of U.S. taxes coming in, back the dollar. Folks, it's a confidence game. It's a confidence game. And you got two ways that you can look at it. You could take a little bit of a skeptical angle and maybe start to try to open the brain up just a little bit and consider some other scenarios. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm not telling you to panic. I'm not telling you to sell stocks. I'm not telling you to buy gold. I'm not saying any of those things. But what I'm saying is, I don't think it hurts to be cognizant that there is another angle to this bigger picture, more so than what you get from a guy that knows how the game's played, used to be a hedge fund manager, used to short stocks, and then has the balls and the audacity to come out and tell his viewers that the Fed shouldn't raise rates, and the only reason that they were raising rates, or the people that want them to raise rates, are hedge fund managers with short positions. How about people with common sense, all right? That's who I represent. I'm not a hedge fund manager. I'm not net short. Just a guy trying to use my brain, and then eventually kill off some of those brain cells with some beer. Folks, that's it for the day. Wasn't that a fun time? We laughed, we cried, we screamed. At one point, you can't even hear it. I punched the desk while I was saying something, and then the fucking podcast thing got all fucked up, so I had to go back and rewind. So at some point, I had to edit this. There was a point in there where I was yelling, and I did punch the desk. So I'm okay now. I'm going to go meditate for a couple hours, all right? So everybody leave me alone. Stop blowing my phone up. I need to achieve a Zen-like state. For the time being, folks, keep your wits about you, all right? Don't believe everything you read or hear on the internet, this podcast included. And I will see you the next time I'm agitated about something. And who knows, that's the fun thing about this podcast, folks. Something could piss me off driving home from jiu-jitsu tonight, and I could come back to the computer and scream back into the microphone for another hour, or you might not hear from me for, you know, a week and a half. But the one thing is for sure, I do appreciate my patrons. Thank you to the new guys that signed up, and thank you very much for listening. But for now, I'm the fuck out. Peace!